Hello, and welcome to this podcast focusing on advances in managing EGFR mutant non-small cell lung cancer, applying evidence across the disease continuum. In this episode, which includes excerpts from a recent tumor board program, Drs. Tina Cascone, Christina Bake, and David Planchard discuss data-supported and guideline-recommended strategies to treat EGFR-mutated non-small cell lung cancer. This activity is provided by PER and supported by an educational grant from AstraZeneca. First, Dr. Cascone will discuss data for neoadjuvant osimertinib from the NeoAdora study, followed by a discussion of the practical implications of this study with Drs. Bake and Planchard.
So we move on now in taking the targeted therapy even earlier on when the tumor is still in place, so prior to surgery in the neoadjuvant setting. At this ASCO meeting 2025, so just a couple of months ago, Dr. Schaft presented the data of the NeoAdora study. This was a global randomized phase 3 control study where patients with resectable EGFR mutant stage 2, 3 B non-small cell lung cancer with classical EGFR mutations, the exon 19 deletion and the exon 21 substitution, were randomized 1:1:1 to three arms. We had a placebo plus platinum-based chemotherapy, osimertinib monotherapy, and then the combination, followed by surgery, and followed by investigator choice of treatment. The primary endpoint was the MPR, or major pathological response, which was defined by central pathology review. Classically, the MPR has been defined as 10% or less residual viable tumor in the resected primary specimen. And then they had a number of secondary endpoints that, again, are going to be very important as we think of this analysis in the real-world data. So this is the primary endpoint, the MPR rates. You can see that chemotherapy alone with placebo, 2%. And I want to pause for one second to remind you that historically, the PCR rate to platinum-based chemotherapy, if we look at the work of meta-analysis, has been in a median of 4%. So it's gone from 0 to 16%. So the 2% is pretty much in alignment with what we have seen with historical data of platinum-based chemotherapy. And you can see a very similar rate of MPR with the OC plus chemo and OC alone, so 26% and 25%, with definitely an important and meaningful difference of the MPR in the combination arm as well as in the OC alone as compared to the chemotherapy plus placebo. Here are the interim EFS analysis. Please keep in mind that we are at 15% maturity. So you can see the hazard ratio with OC alone 0.73, OC plus chemo 0.5, suggesting a benefit with those two regimens, but perhaps some more important benefit with the combination with OC and chemotherapy. Again, I want to be very cautious in how we look at this data. We're very early on. You can see the amount of censoring right in these Kaplan-Meier curves. The safety summary in the neoadjuvant period, very overall manageable and tolerated with grade 3 and higher treatment-related adverse events of any cause or treatment-related that have been pretty much similar to what we've seen in the metastatic setting. So, questions regarding the neoadjuvant paradigm with the NeoAdora. I want to ask again my colleagues, based on this data reported in JCO at time of conference, do we actually consider this paradigm, Christine, in our patients?
So I think after the publication, the way I think about it is that for stage 3, where we're already doing neoadjuvant chemotherapy, at least at our institution, I think there is compelling evidence to add OC to that setting. On the other hand, if for stage 2 and earlier stages, in lack of PCR, whether it's worth changing our practice, I think our stand at our institution was that no, not yet. Mm-hmm. That a lot of the survival data that we expect to see is probably from adjuvant treatment, and that we would start chemo and osimertinib post-op setting. So we're kind of using the data differently for different stages.
Yeah, interesting. David, I actually asked you the question to build up on what you answered earlier. So if you had to have a stage 3 patients with multi-station disease and you had the opportunity now to have a NeoAdora paradigm in place, would you give the combination of chemo and OC in the neoadjuvant setting for a patient with that amount of burden of the disease?
This is probably an important question and probably the things we are discussing in MTB. I would say nowadays, when you see the NeoAdora trial, it showed some data in terms of response and disease-free survival, probably not enough convincing nowadays to be sure that you translate in a benefit in overall survival, particularly because it's a short exposure to osimertinib. I always worried it's not the same thing with immune treatment, because with immunotherapy, you just need 1, 2, 3 injections and generally it's gone. With the TKI, the risk, what's happened beyond when you stop the TKI and osimertinib, if the patient is not in PCR, which is the case, should I have the risk after to have more resistant disease in the adjuvant setting? So that's why I need to have further data, and particularly because for your patient in this case, the other option is chemo-RT followed by osimertinib. And the trial have shown highly positive and highly convincing to expose osimertinib after chemo-RT, like in the LORA trial. So that's why in this setting nowadays, I would be prudent, I would be much more prudent to wait much more data. So in the N2 multi-station, it should be considered, I would say, like unresectable disease, and I would go probably for chemo-RT followed by osimertinib in this situation.
I think that's a very important answer, because it brings us to, again, the importance of the multidisciplinary tumor board discussion and whether, you know, disposition a patient to surgery up front and then having so many. It's a good problem to have when you have several options that you actually have to tailor to the patient, or go with a LORA paradigm, right, and have a definitive chemoradiation followed by OC.
In the next segment, Dr. Planchard will discuss data for frontline therapy for metastatic EGFR-mutated non-small cell lung cancer from the FLAURA 2 and MARIPOSA studies.
Just start with the first clinical cases we had at Gustave Roussy. It's a young patient, 40 years, never smoker, excellent performance status. She came from some specific pelvic pain. And unfortunately, we discovered an adenocarcinoma with multiple mets, lung, lymph node, bone, liver, and brain mets. So she had tissue biopsy, liquid biopsy, as we do for all the patients in first line. And we identified this EGFR mutation, deletion 19, association with a PIK3CA mutation, and no other specific driver mutation. The PD-L1 was negative by immunohistochemistry. So this is a baseline imaging. So you can see the right lesion with multiple pulmonary nodes, and also some mediastinal lymph node. It was T3N3, a multiple mediastinal lymph node. She had a PET-CT scan with multiple liver mets, bone mets, unfortunately. A lot of second lesion, including the brain mets, as you can see with the brain MRI. So it was a T3N3 M1C with multiple extrathoracic mets, including the brain mets. So the first question probably would be nowadays, so at that time it was a few years ago, but nowadays in 2025, should I start this patient, a young lady adenocarcinoma, deletion 19 with a monotic eye, so osimertinib, versus should I have chemotherapy combo, should I have TKI plus bispecific antibody, should I want to privilege ADC that block TROP2 or HER3, for example, or should I still go with a monotic eye, but I prefer to go with a brain irradiation. So this is something we might discuss nowadays for the first line of treatment. So what we have nowadays in terms of result, and what probably are the best situations and the best option for this patient. First, clearly osimertinib, I would say, is still a nice backbone for this population. You remember the FLAURA trial, which identified a clear benefit in terms of progression-free survival, but also in terms of PFS, and whatever for the PFS, exon 19 or exon 21, just focus on the overall survival. Exon 19, clearly, exon 21, LL5R mutation, you can see the trend is less pronounced in comparison to the deletion 19. And we know that this population generally have a worse prognostic with EGFR TKI, whatever the EGFR TKI. And probably we might discuss in this case intensification of treatment to clearly improve the overall survival in this subpopulation, exon 21. Recently, it was published. It's an observational retrospective analysis from database from the US that just look at the prognostic of patients that receive osimertinib first line of treatment. What we can say, just to identify the subpopulation for which we might keep a close eye, particularly seems to have a worse prognostic, the TP53 patient, L85L mutation, the brain mets, and the liver mets. And probably for this subpopulation, we might be tempted to have a more intensification of treatment because they have a higher risk of recurrence and a shorter overall survival. So what about the FLAURA2 trial? In this case, it's to add chemotherapy concomitantly upfront with osimertinib. So 2 years ago, we reported the primary endpoint, which was progression-free survival assessed by the investigator, also by the BIRC. And you can see whatever, you have a highly significant improvement in PFS, whatever assessment by investigator or by BIRC, nearly 10 months improvement in PFS first line of treatment. We look on the subpopulation, all subgroups have a benefit to receive the combination, and particularly we just focus on patients with exon 91 mutation, LL5R mutation, and you can see in this case, just to fight the hard chemotherapy, they have the same prognostic in comparison to the deletion 19, and also particularly patients with brain mets that seem to have a huge benefit if you had chemotherapy in this population. So L858R, brain mets, you can see you improve the PFS in both populations of around 11 months. And in terms of intracranial brain response, you can see you have 50% of patients complete intracranial brain response when you had chemotherapy to osimertinib first line versus 16% with osimertinib monotherapy. We know osimertinib is an excellent drug for the brain met, but you know in this case 50% of patients complete intracranial brain response. So I think this is clearly two populations of interest. We look at the biomarker. The other things for which probably we might discuss to had chemotherapy in this population are the patient with high tumor burden, and particularly the patient who are ctDNA positive at baseline. And this is what you can see on the left. Patients ctDNA positive at baseline have a clear benefit if you had chemotherapy. Patients were ctDNA negative, in this case, it was not so clear that you bring a benefit in terms of progression-free survival to had chemotherapy. This is another message. And on the right, we look at the number of metastatic site. So whatever the number of metastatic site, the PFS was improved, the fact to had chemotherapy, but particularly patient high tumor burden with at least or more 3 metastatic sites. And you can see in this case, the hazard ratio 0.57. So clearly, I think this is something we take in account nowadays in clinical practice. Patient with brain mets, exon 21 mutation, patient high tumor burden, at least 3 metastatic sites, and particularly patient who are ctDNA positive. So in this case, I think we clearly need to be more aggressive. PFS2 trend also in a benefit with the combination. And until now, we had only an intermediate overall survival analysis, which was immature with a nice trend of benefit in overall survival to had chemotherapy with osimertinib. But nowadays, we have the mature pre-planned analysis that have been shown this morning. And clearly, if you had chemotherapy to osimertinib, you significantly improve the median overall survival in patients versus osimertinib monotherapy. Median improvement, 10 months. Combination median OS, 47.5 months. That means 4 years. So this is the new step, 4 years median overall survival in the FLAURA2 trial compared to 37.6 months in the monotherapy arm. The monotherapy arm performed as expected. It was comparable to what had been previously reported in the FLAURA trial. So you can see just the fact you had chemotherapy, you had 10 months median overall survival, 3 years overall survival rate were 63% versus 51% in the monotherapy arm. So clearly, it's confirmed a new standard of care in first line in this population. Again, we look on the subpopulation on the left, and the OS benefit with the combination was consistent with all predefined subgroup populations, including the brain mets, including patients with L85R mutation. So nowadays, I cannot tell you which patient You should exclude to receive chemotherapy plus osimertinib when you see the magnitude of benefit in terms of overall survival, but for sure we will generate additional data, particularly on the OS benefit in the next months coming. Whatever, just look the median duration exposure of osimertinib. If you look the median duration exposure of osimertinib in the combination arm, nowadays you reach 30 months median exposure to osimertinib versus 21 months in the monotherapy arm. And if you compare to the median duration exposure of pemetrexed, it was 8.3 months. So you can see finally, the median duration exposure was 3 times more longer than the pemetrexed in the combination arm. So that means finally you have this induction period, and after, many patients have a long period of chemotherapy free in the combination arm, which is nice, particularly in terms of side effects. So this patient finally continues only osimertinib monotherapy. We look the subsequent treatment. This is what you can see on the bottom on the left. And you can see even in the combination arm, you have 40% of patients, second-line treatment was a rechallenge with platinum-based chemotherapy, and 30% a non-platinum-based chemotherapy. So you can keep, even if the patient receive in first-line platinum-based chemotherapy, again, you can rechallenge the patient with a platinum-based chemotherapy. And in the osimertinib monotherapy arm, 72% of patients in terms of second-line of treatment, it was a platinum-based chemotherapy, so the standard of care that was applied in the control arm. So clearly nowadays, it's pushing the combination in first line of treatment for all the patients with an EGFR mutation. We have also nice data with osimertinib that showed also a significant improvement in PFS and a nice trend in terms of overall survival. So going on the same side in comparison to the FLAURA2 result. Any other alternative? I would say yes, and it's always nice to have different alternatives, particularly with amivantamab lazertinib. So in this case, it's a chemotherapy-free combination, but not toxicity-free combination. The trial is positive in terms of progression-free survival. It's positive in terms of overall survival, but unfortunately, the median overall survival was not reached at the final analysis of overall survival. So it will be difficult to compare because finally, you are not supposed to look at the median overall survival. It's immature at the final analysis that I've already presented. And the crossover, unfortunately, was not allowed in the Mariposa trial, which is a shame because finally, we would have loved to see the crossover with amivantamab in association with platinum-based chemotherapy in second line of treatment. Again, the benefit was observed in all the subpopulations. I'm honestly just most cautious about the magnitude of benefit in the L858R mutation and particularly also in the brain met, because currently we never have seen the intracranial brain response with amivantamab lazertinib, despite if there is an efficiency on the brain met, but honestly, we don't have seen nowadays the type of data in this population, and just worried also about the elderly patient, 65 or higher, probably might be slightly too much toxic in this population. Whatever, just compare, because I think this is something we need to have in clinical practice, which type of combination, the brain mets. Just look the intracranial progression-free survival. On the left, Mariposa 0.82, on the right with FLAURA2, hazard ratio 0.47. It's always challenging to compare, but for sure, we have generated, I think, nice data in the FLAURA2. The major issue, you need to manage the side effect and particularly the toxicity. We know the toxicity of platinum-based chemotherapy because most of our patients, they receive a platinum-based chemotherapy. It could be challenging to manage the side effect of amivantamab, particularly in terms of rash, the paronychia, the peripheral edema, infusion reaction, and the venous thromboembolism. So you need to prevent everything, infusion reaction, venous thromboembolism, and the skin toxicity. So it makes a lot of treatment to add to try to avoid or to diminish the side effect of the toxicity. And so that's why I think in this trial, it's important to look over time to the cumulative toxicity. We don't want to see the first event of toxicity, but the cumulative toxicity. And this is something we have presented at ESMO meeting, cumulative toxicity of the FLAURA2 trial. And you can see over time, the toxicity significantly reduced because finally, most of the toxicity are within the first 3 months combination of platinum-based chemotherapy plus osimertinib. After you continue slightly the pemetrexed, and finally you will stop pemetrexed. Median number of cycle of pemetrexed was 11, and you have seen median duration of exposure to osimertinib was 30 months. So finally, most of the patients, they continue only osimertinib in monotherapy, and you know the excellent tolerability of osimertinib. If we look on the other side, in the Mariposa trial, the only thing they have showed, it's only the first one side, first time of adverse event. But this is not what we want to see. We want to see the cumulative side effect over time. Otherwise, it's really difficult to look at the safety and the toxicity of this type of combination. So for sure, if you want to use these schemes of combination with AMI and lazertinib, you need to prevent the skin toxicity, you need to prevent the infusion reaction, and you need to prevent the venous thromboembolism. So keep in mind all this education. Otherwise, it's highly toxic, unfortunately, for the patient. Hopefully, to have new way to deliver the amivantamab, particularly the subcutaneous form, for which you significantly reduce the infusion reaction. You do not reduce, unfortunately, really the venous thromboembolism and the skin toxicity, but you significantly reduce the infusion reaction. So that means nowadays it's always nice because we are more and more options in first line of treatment and try to avoid and try to prevent the mechanism of resistance. And we will have the discussion after how to treat the patient when they have a recurrency after first line of treatment. So what we did for our patient, young patient, deletion 19 with multiple lesions, including the brain mets. So you just see the baseline CT scan. So we decided to treat the patient with osimertinib plus chemotherapy. And as you can see, after 4 cycles of chemotherapy plus osimertinib, she reached nearly a complete response. We just have the sequel on the right lesion pulmonary. And the best things, the patient was in complete intracranial brain response. She did not receive any brain irradiation. And so this is clearly a nice response for the patient. So we followed the treatment. So the patient finally received 12 cycles of maintenance of OC plus pemetrexed. And finally, we decided, due to asthenia, to stop the pemetrexed. And the patient continued osimertinib in monotherapy more than 2 years. And you can see nowadays, the patient is still in complete response. Intracranial, complete response. Bone, complete response. Lymph node, complete response. And the pulmon, the lung site, also in complete response. You still have this small sequel on the right, but that is for the patient. So we have to make the decision. We have to discuss on MTB nowadays all the different options. Backbone for me, clearly it's osimertinib. Should I go AMI laser? Should I add chemotherapy in our patient first line of treatment? So we need to take in account all the different things before to choose the treatment. Particularly, I would say we need to discuss with the patient. We need to say, okay, nowadays we have the potentiality of combination, benefit in OS, benefit in overall survival. What are the side effects? So preference of the patient, I think, is important. The ECOG performance status, the comorbidity, you will take in account. For sure, you need to take in account the site of metastasis, and particularly the brain met, I think, make the decision to make an intensification of treatment, EGFR subtype mutation, eventually the commutation, not so clear nowadays for the TP53, for the PFS in the FLAURA2 trial, but we will look at for the overall survival. ctDNA, I think this is something we could take in account, the tumor burden and the symptom of the patient. On the other side, you need to take in account the side effect profile, quality of life of the patient, because this patient nowadays have a prolonged overall survival, as you have seen, intensification and monitoring of the patient, taking account what will be the next line of treatment and the next option. And for sure, you need to take in account the outpatient, inpatient, the drug availability, how the patient can get access to the drug. Sometimes it might be challenging, depending on the access nowadays for all this type of treatment. So this is what we discuss. And just lastly, so that means nowadays, we have the standard of care with osimertinib, and after, let's discuss the best line of treatment. For sure nowadays, we can improve significantly the overall survival combination amilazertinib or osimertinib plus platinum-based chemotherapy. And so this is something we need to apply and discuss first line of treatment. And you will see that finally, the further line of treatment, we still have multiple options included in the FLAURA trial because, as you have seen, high number of patients receive a rechallenge with platinum-based chemotherapy. We have nowadays also the ADC. And clearly, we need to discuss and re-biopsy the patient, tissue biopsy, liquid biopsy, to identify the mechanism of escape and particularly the MET amplification for which nowadays we have specific MET TKI and also potentially NICE ADC, which target MET, and new generation of ADC, which are coming to target the MET amplification. So multiple options are coming in our patient and hope nowadays we can push further, so that means nowadays the new bar is median overall survival 4 years according to the FLAURA 2 trial. So hope nowadays we can push to five, 6 years and even more in this population with an EGFR mutation.
In the next segment, Dr. Baik will discuss data from the SAVANNAH study.
So let me start with the case. This is a patient of mine. She is 58, presents with dyspnea, was found to have large left pleural effusion, had a diagnostic thorough that showed a TTF1 positive adenocarcinoma with deletion 19 mutation. She clearly has metastatic disease with CNS and bone metastases, yet she does have a good performance status. She was diagnosed about 3 years ago. We started her on osimertinib monotherapy, and she actually had a great response, including in the brain, and she did really well for a couple of years, but she was found to have new liver metastases while her CNS disease was stable. So not an uncommon scenario. So I have four potential next options. What would you do next? Would you add chemo to osimertinib? Would you switch to AMI plus chemo? Would you obtain circulating tumor DNA and add chemo if ctDNA is negative? Or would you do circulating tumor DNA as well as biopsy the liver, especially if ctDNA is unremarkable? We're not taking a poll, but you can, you know, kind of think through that and see what you would do if you had this patient in front of you. So I wanted to go over some of the post-osimertinib resistance data. So this is post-osimertinib ctDNA data. So this is ctDNA at baseline and at progression, not tissue. And this was based on FLAURA study. And what we can see here is that the most common alteration is MET amplification. In this data set, it was in 16% of patients. 6% of patients were found to have a on-target C797 mutation. And we can see a whole list of alterations like BRAF, ALK fusion, RAS mutations, et cetera. So what if we add chemotherapy to osimertinib? And this is data set that was presented about a year ago from the FLAURA 2 study. And what we can see in this column here is that resistance mechanism is pretty consistent. Again, the most common was MET amplification, some C797S, and we see number of RAF, RAS, and mutations and fusions as well. Now, this is data that was presented earlier today. This, just as a reminder, SAVANNAH clinical trial was a study looking at patients post-osimertinib who had a MET amplification by FISH and overexpression by IHC, so not NGS-based testing, but for eligibility was FISH and IHC. And what they, the treatment was osimertinib and savolitinib. So in this study on the screening, initial screening, what was found was that there was about 34% of patients who were found to be high MET. And that was defined as MET IHC positive, fairly high expression at 3 plus in more than 90% of tumor cells, and FISH 10 plus, so gene copy number 10 or more by FISH. So pretty high cutoffs. And even with the high cutoff, there was about a 34% high MET status. Now, what was also seen in this study is that if we compare tissue NGS to FISH, and FISH, you know, sort of being the gold standard, at least for this study, and what it was shown, it was that tissue NGS, there was a very good correlation with FISH amplification. However, if we look at ctDNA, there was an, you know, the sensitivity or positive predictive value was around 50%. So ctDNA certainly doesn't capture everything in terms of amplification because of the probability of the shedding, but also, you know, obviously it's not going to identify the expressed, the overexpression on tissue as well. So this really emphasizes the importance of doing, you know, going one step forward for biopsy, especially if ctDNA is unremarkable.
In the final segment, Dr. Bake will discuss data for chemotherapy-based treatment of recurrent, metastatic, EGFR-mutated non-small cell lung cancer.
So what about chemo? There are several options that we can think about. So the COMPEL study, it's an interesting study. So the study allows patients who progressed on osimertinib but non-CNS progression. So patients who have progression systemically, they continue they go to chemo, but they're randomized to OC versus no OC. So really the important clinical question of, is continuing osimertinib beyond progression truly helpful? Now, the data is going to be presented tomorrow. I got the data here based on the abstract, so I would encourage you to look at the presentation for kind of the finalized data. At least on the abstract, there was a PFS hazard ratio of 0.43. Now, the more mature studies, and now I want to say the COMPEL study is a small study, about 100 patients. Now, the more mature chemotherapy-based regimen studies are MARIPOSA 2 and HARMONY A, of course. And in MARIPOSA 2, there's chemo plus or minus amivantamab. The HARMONY A combines chemo plus or minus ivonescimab. And both studies have patients who progressed on an EGFR TKI alone. And we can see, response rate again in the 50 to 60% range, median PFS around 6-7 months. Certainly there is trend for, or you know, significant overall survival benefit for MARIPOSA 2. The caveat here is that there was no crossover to amivantamab. So that is the big caveat in terms of the survival benefit. Now, in HARMONY A, we saw the data earlier today that there is a trend, but it's not significant. Now, I added TROPION-Lung 5 here because it is a chemo regimen, at least in the U.S. or ADC regimen that we do have available. The patient population is a bit different because these are patients who have been exposed to chemotherapy. The response rate is decent in the 40% range with the PFS around 6 months. You know, it really remains to be seen whether this response holds in a larger study. Usually in a larger study, the response rate tends to go down a little bit. So we have a number of options in terms of chemo. I think how we decide, there's not a clear winner if we look at all these different regimens. It's going to depend on what the patient has received previously. You know, has that patient started with chemotherapy? Has that patient started with amivantamab, for example? And then in the decision will be based on whether a patient, in terms of the patient's acceptance of specific toxicities.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. For more information on this topic, click on the link in the podcast description.